Welcome to America Weekend.
America Weekend.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally. Come on, lock the way we rock it. So don't stop. And under the lights when everything goes nowhere.
Four after the hour, Doug, Jen, and Victoria. Let's make today a good day for you and for everybody. Let's figure out how to fix a problem.
Okay.
So let's see what we can do about having our voting machines hacked. A professor from Princeton University, his name is Andrew Appel, demonstrated for the news media how easy it is to hack a voting machine. He took a $4 computer chip, replacing the chip, which was basically a computer program in a voting machine. It adds up the votes in a different way. So this fellow, who is a prof from the computer science department, he runs the graduate program, so he's a pretty smart cookie, and he focused on computer security and voting systems in his 7-minute presentation. That's all it took, 7 minutes, for him to replace the program and hack every single computer that was in the room.
Wow, that's scary.
7 minutes and a $4 chip, and it changed the course of what would be the election results in this. This was obviously a, pardon the pun, trumped up election, but he just used that. He says that there isn't any, at the moment, any documented case of voting machine fraud, but here's how easy it'll be for somebody to do it. You don't have to be in Africa. You don't have to be in Russia. You don't have to be in China. Somebody can do it. They can walk into the room, and because there's really no security, these computers don't have any security on them. Somebody could walk over to him and take one chip out, put another chip in, bingo, 7 minutes, it's all over.
Wow.
So what do we do? Thank heavens to the guy I wonder if he was a hacker before he became a professor. So that's how he got his job.
That's what so many people are worried about. You know, as we come up on the election, everybody's talking about different ways to make it easier for people to vote, because apparently driving a few miles and going to your polling place can be a little difficult, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Very taxing on the old system. And yeah. So a lot of people go, well, why can't we do it online? These are the reasons why we can't do it online. I mean, in LA and in Southern California, where I am, they've been talking about doing it the old-fashioned way, like hand counting votes, but then you deal with a whole other set of problems, which is human error. So I don't even know if there is a really true good answer here.
There doesn't seem to be. Facebook can't even get their trending news right. They keep switching back between an algorithm and a human, and it's all messed up. So
he says, this professor says that it's easy to find these loopholes. Even if the machines are stored in a warehouse, the door's locked, they have security cameras, but you have access to the machines, the people who maintain them, for example, the people who work for these companies. Remember about 10 years ago, it was discovered that, I'm trying to remember, Conrad somebody or other, is a senator from Montana or maybe Utah, but he had, maybe Wyoming, I'm not sure, but Conrad somebody or other had a big stake in the company that made these computers for elections. And you know, people said, well, what is that going to do to the reality of this? He could get in. Or he could tell somebody to change. If it's as easy as this guy demonstrated, this is something that anybody in the third grade who knows how to fool around with computers can do.
Mm-hmm.
You can mess with these things.
Scary.
It really is. You know, maybe you go back. Everybody says, well, this will make it much easier. More people can vote. And it'll get it done faster. I don't know that faster is better. And I don't know that I want it to be faster. I did my, at the primary last week in Framingham, I did my voting. And put it on we have ballots, and I did mine, and
What kind of ballots do you have there?
Paper ballots.
Paper?
Yeah. And I just take a magic marker and fill in the hole, and then I walk back to the ballot box and put my ballot in, and it kicked it out because I put it in upside down. And the lady was all worried because she said, I don't want to see your ballot. Please come back. And because I was on my way out the door. And she said, Mr. Stephan, wait a minute. And because the ballot machine had kicked out, I didn't turn it over because it only went one way.
Is it like a scanner thing? Because that's what I have here in New York City.
No, fill out it goes the into the box and they count them by hand.
Oh, wow.
Well, they run them through some ID machine that picks out the boxes that you've circled or checked or whatever it is. And the only thing the box does is tell you how many people had been in there to vote that day. That was it. That's all. And then they take them out. But so then the other side of that is maybe they drop one on the floor. Or one of them ends up in the wastebasket or something. You know, they're pretty good about it. They're pretty conscious about it. But somebody could tell. There's all kinds of things that can be done. This is a very impure science. Elections, ballot counting, all of that stuff.
Isn't it just bizarre that we all have probably different methods of voting? It's weird to me that, you know, I have a paper ballot that goes into a scanner and maybe Jen has a machine where she, you know, hits buttons. Or it's just so bizarre that it's not standardized on any level.
No, it's state by state. But one thing is for sure, it's pretty easy. You could have gone in to vote for me, Victoria.
Hello, I'm Doug Stephan.
Yeah, you just go, you give them the street address. Oh, yes, Mr. Stephan. And
I live in the lovely farm up the road.
Right, yeah. Oh, you know, that's not. They look at the address and they look at me and they say, oh, you live there? That's what the, you know, that's, hello, you're not supposed to be making judgments on where
someone
I live.
Said that to you?
Yeah. The lady who was like, oh, you're the one who lives there.
That's something you would do to me when I showed up at the voting place. You know, you'd be like, oh, you live there.
All right. You live there?
I'm amazed you even made it here alive today.
I know. Brave soul.
Exactly. All right. The bombing suspect, Ahmad Rahami, been on the FBI radar list for a couple of years.
Ugh.
So how come they weren't watching him more carefully?
I actually had the opportunity to interview a guy named Philip Haney yesterday on one of my many jobs.
18 shows.
One of my 18 shows that I do. Do you know who Philip Haney is?
No.
He worked for the Department of Homeland Security. He was brought in to do as a researcher who was supposed to find people that were coming into this country, either naturalized citizens or not, basically, but people coming into this country and linking them to the battlefield, basically. So if they were getting training or if they were involved in extremist mosques, whatever, he would identify them. And he was called in to a meeting at the Department of Homeland Security by high-ranking officials and told not to continue with the work that he was assigned because basically, it was a violation of civil rights. And so his book, he became a whistleblower. And it happened right after the San Bernardino terrorist attacks when he realized, he looked up at the TV and he realized that he recognized the faces because he had done research on these two. They were very much a part of his researching these people. He knew who they were. He knew that they had extreme stuff in their history. And so he wrote this book, See Something, Say Nothing. And so it got me thinking about, and I've heard other people talk about this too, at the FBI and law enforcement, they, you know, on the ground, they do a great job. But what kind of stuff is coming from above that kind of ties their hands? You know, what keeps them from making these connections or taking seriously these people that they run into? I mean, the last terror suspects or the last people that have perpetrated terrorist attacks on this country, the FBI knew about. They knew about Omar Mateen. They knew about Rahami. They knew about Saeed Farouk. They knew about Hassan. I mean, they had him on. They had all of these guys on record. Why aren't they doing something about it? And the only thing I can think of is coming from the top.
Yeah. Well, this Rahami guy, I mean, they know he flew back and forth to Afghanistan, right, in the last few years.
He was also going into Quetta, which is an area of Pakistan that you can't, I mean, no one goes there for, like, the scenery. Like, this is a place that's in total war mode, basically. And so there's a lot of bad guys there. There's a lot of training areas there. And to see that being, you know, brought back and forth, you know, willy-nilly almost, he was able to go there a few times from this country without a red flag. It's scary. Well,
the thing that's weird, too, is how come that guy isn't on a no-fly list? And, you know, you see these people when 60 Minutes does an expose of the no-fly list, and it's like some nerdy, you know, like some nerdy older guy, you know, who, little white guy with glasses, and he's like, my name's John Smith, and I didn't do anything wrong, but I'm on the no-fly list.
I'm okay.
And it's like all these people who end up on the no-fly list for no reason, and then that guy
and
is
can't
flying
get off.
Yeah, and then that guy's flying wherever he wants to go, and no one seems to mind.
No one's stopping. I mean, when your own father calls into the FBI and says that my son is a terrorist,
yeah.
I mean, that's a serious issue, and one not to be taken lightly. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I knew he was interviewed, and he said in anger he had accused his son of acting like a terrorist, but I didn't know he actually called the FBI proactively.
He called the police in 2014, said, my son is a terrorist. That's what he said. So, and takes, I mean, we're giving the FBI a lot of credit here they don't deserve. This information was handed to them on a silver platter, and they still didn't do much with it.
And it has been, by the way. Like, this is not the first time that the FBI knew about these people. And so it's not that the agents are bad. It has to be that they're getting directives as to what's appropriate and what's not from the higher-ups. And that is really, really scary, because you've heard now all of this information coming to light, that there have been all these arrests of people who have associations and ties to ISIS in this country that we never even hear about because they bury it.
Right now, though, I want to ring a bell for those of you who are athletes, for those of you who want peak performance, for those of you who are working hard to keep yourself in shape, you're eating the right foods, you're doing all the things, and you still don't seem to have, a lot of people tell you, exercise more, you'll have more energy. Well, that's true, but if you haven't got all the things, all the pieces together in your body, then it's not going to work as well. So that's why I suggest you boost your circulation to get as much blood as possible to your brains, to your muscles, to all the organs in your body. And using Super Beats to do that is the number one way to deliver to your body the material it needs, the raw material that comes with the need. If you're an athlete, you got to keep your muscles strong. If you're working, you want to keep your brain, you're at a job that requires you to be alert. Richie can't fall asleep at the controls. Got to be alert. So you take a teaspoon of Super Beats, the powder, put it into a 4-ounce glass of water and drink it. And you'll then become aware and alive. And you can stay that way for 4 or 5 hours without any other enhancements. That's what this stuff does. It opens up the nitric oxide, which is, Dr. Ken says, the third most important element in our body. It opens up your veins, gets all that blood to the important areas of your body, and keeps it flowing. It doesn't go away. It's not just a one-minute thing or one shot. It stays open, so your blood pressure is normal. All of the things that athletes want to have as a performance edge stay there. The average game, baseball game, 3.5, 4 hours, 3.5?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, football game about the same, right? So
yeah.
You got to keep your energy sustained. In the average basketball game, I mean, most of these professional athletes take this stuff before the game begins, and it holds them through the game. Get on that same course of action. Call 800-655-4183. That's 800-655-4183. Get a 3-month supply at the regular price and an extra month free. Feel the results, or you get your money back. Get the book Beat the Odds, too, as part of this whole deal. And free shipping when you mention Doug Steffen. Dial 800-655-4183. Have that feeling of stamina, of energy, of excitement. Your body is going to respond wonderfully. I guarantee it. 800-655-4183. Or buy them online at DougLikesBeats.com. Out.
Hi, this is Victoria Keelan from On Air with Doug, Jen, and Victoria. It's time for you to sound off. As one of our valued listeners, your opinions matter. Just log on to djvshow.com and click on the survey button on the homepage. Tell us about yourself, tell us why you listen, and tell us what you think. And as a thank you for completing our survey, we'll enter you in a random drawing where 5 lucky listeners will win $300 cash. So go to djvshow.com right now and click on the survey link. That's djvshow.com.
Think green. Harrison with you. Firefly populations have dropped 70% in
than 3 years, drawing more than 100 scientists to Thailand to a symposium to study the demise of these glowworms or lightning bugs. No single factor is blamed, but researchers in America and Europe cite urban sprawl and industrial pollution, which destroys insect habitats. The spread of artificial light from what they're calling McMansion subdivisions could also be a culprit, disrupting the intricate mating behavior that relies on a male winning over a female with its flashing backside, signaling everything from love to danger. The endangered firefly's adult lifespan is just 1 to 3 weeks, and scientists are now underscoring that fireflies are a canary in a coal mine in terms of understanding the declining health of our ecosystem.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Today on App Check, with Falling Stars, create musical compositions using Falling Stars. Users like the inventiveness, but they must have too much time on their hands. Falling Stars.
Picky, picky, picky.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Welcome to American Biker Minutes.
Especially you Yankees on sickles.
Carolina Backroads.
We don't lock that sickle trash down here.
Today on American Biker Minutes.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute.
Going through a backroads town in North Carolina.
Smokey and the Biker.
Good old Southern cop, the one blue light like you see in Smokey and the Bandit. We don't cotton the Yankees here. Well, we're just going through, sir. That's the way I like it, he says. Especially you Yankees on sickles. We don't lock that sickle trash down here. I'm going to let you go because I noticed you stopped in our local restaurant. If you wouldn't, he says, I'd have to cite you. Shut my mouth up. Road out.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. So, in a marriage, who's happier, the man or the woman? Or put it another way, who's more at risk for depression, the husband or the wife? Here's the social science of it. In a marriage, there are ups and there are downs, and a totally perfect marriage, well, it's just only seen in a Hollywood movie. But who's more happier while married, men or women? Now, married males tend to be happier than unmarried males, but get this. Married females reported higher rates of sadness while married than unmarried females. What's the cheap psych trick? One should strive for happiness, and it's possible to achieve. But in everyone's married life, a little sadness will fall. But if sadness becomes so debilitating that it's impossible to even think about a happy marriage again, then you might want to check out some professional assistance. Check out my book while you're at it, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Lovers, at drbuff.com.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
All right, 10 before the hour.